Today we'll be speaking with Dieter Schwerner, CMBCHE, professor in baking and pastry arts. His professional background is indeed quite extensive. He's worked at many New York restaurants, including Le Chantilly, L'Étoile, La Côte Basque, Cirque, and is now currently professor of baking and pastry arts at the CIA. Hello.
Hello. This is Dieter Schwerner speaking.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
Not too bad, Chef. Glad you're able to join us this morning and appreciate you getting up early.
No, fine. I'm usually up 7 in the morning.
Oh, okay. How did you start and where did you start learning pastry?
It's quite a long story. More or less that when I grew up, it was during the wartime. And because my father died in the war, we were 4 children and not enough food at home. And so it was a friend of mine, actually a schoolmate, his father had a bakery. And so he asked if I come in the morning before I come, go to school and put some salt on the bread for in a small little town in Bavarian. And so I went in the morning at 6 o'clock to 7:30 to the bakery. And, of course, the baker gave me some bread and flour at home for my mother. Later on, of course, that same gentleman convinced my mother when I finished my school that I would be a great candidate to learn to be a baker. While I was working out there, it was not what I actually liked. It was more or less to survive. But the same gentleman had a wonderful library and beautiful books of pastry and cakes and chocolates. And then I said, that I want to make. I don't want to put salt and pretzel and make rolls. I want to learn pastry and cakes. At the same time, my grandmother died and left me some money. And I took this money and went to the best chocolate school there was in the world, to Basel in Switzerland. Huh. Yeah, halfway through the school time, of course, my money ran out. I had nothing more. Even I worked late. What I did, I went in the morning to school. In the night, I worked in a patisserie. Money ran out. So, but the school was very, very nice to me and said, listen here, you're a great student here. We have a wonderful place in Gstaad in Berner Oberland, which is actually, like St. Moritz, one of the finest places in the hospitality industry in Switzerland. And I started in the pastry trade.
Uh-huh.
That's how I started.
Yeah.
From there, I looked never back. From there, I went and from one very good place to the other very good place.
German pastry, where does the inspiration or the ideas come from? Do they look to France or is it to Vienna and Austria?
No, it was more or less Vienna, Austria and Hungarian.
Uh-huh.
Because actually it was the Viennese who had more started with Kaffeehauses and what they call it, die Gemütlichkeit. It means the comfortable way of sitting, eating, and eat your pastry and have a cup of coffee. That's why the Viennese coffee houses are so famous.
Uh-huh.
It is started more over there. How the German, but it's more I believe like in England, that everyone in England probably knows how to make a pudding. So in Germany, of course, everyone, even the housewife, know how to make a loaf of bread.
Sure.
And then, of course, in the 1400s or so, then they added some raisins and almonds into the bread and developed the Stollen, as you heard, the Dresdner Stollen here. And then because of the spice. We know about spices. We received spices more or less from the Scandinavians when the Swedish, the Norwegian brought us in the 1600s more the spices. And then, of course, we became the Lebkuchen, which is a spice bread developed near Nuremberg. And in the northern part is speculatius, little cookies. We had a Dutch and the northern German use. And so I think that's where more or less pastry in Germany started. And I think it was more or less by the Viennese, not by the French. The French culture came later.
And do you think the French then were introduced to finer pastries by the Viennese as well?
No, don't ever tell it to a Frenchman. I mean, then you and I, we get in trouble. I believe also that the French were also influenced by the Italians. Because when the Medici came up, they also brought their sweets with up here. There's chestnuts. And, of course, when we see Crème Chantilly, it is about 60 miles off Paris. There's a town where they start to make the first whipped cream. And so, and maybe it's also the culture of the French that you finish a dinner with either cheese or sweets. Huh. Not every country has things like that one year. And I think it was more or less the French, you need to finish a dinner without sweets or cheese. There's something missing.
And why do you think there's that role for desserts at the end of the meal? How does it complement the meal?
It's one thing is actually for us, if we as pastry chefs really would take advantage of it. No dinner is finished. The dinner can't be satisfied properly if you get a lousy dessert in the end. It has to be, it is, or like the French, the pièce de résistance, the last piece, which you always remember. Not complete. I believe when you go into a place, the first thing is the smile on the face of the person you as a hostess. The second is that you get the best bread and butter in the world.
Uh-huh.
And then that dinner follows. And then the final chapter, which always people remember, the dessert, and I think when they came to the place. In between, we say it's good or bad, but when I go out, it's the first thing when I come to a place that people are happy I'm coming to, not later on the French get so snobbish or certain restaurants are so snobbish, then that I have to be happy to go there.
Uh-huh.
It should be the other way around.
Right.
They should be very happy I coming and enjoy their hospitality and their food. Uh-huh. And when I have to put food, I would make hospitality first and food second. And when hospitality and food comes together, that's perfection, in my opinion.
How can you describe pastry today in America? I mean, how do you see it differently from when you started in patisserie?
Since I came to the state, it's the leaps and bounds. It's wonderful to see young people. They are not confined like we who come from Europe to certain restriction here. This is one of the most beautiful things that young Americans now go into pastry our pastry department increased 3-4 fold at the Culinary Institute. And I think the French industry, French culinary in New York, the same thing. This is wonderful. There are certain things I'm critical about. It is, first, the inspiration of the Americans to be adventurous. That's wonderful. But I have never understood. I went last year to school I'm working for, sent me to San Antonio, where we opened a campus. And they told me, go to this food store. They have the most beautiful pastries. I went there, and believe me, I need a sunglass, because so much color was in every one of the pastries. I mean, overdo it. I understand that we need to lighten up. The colors ask us to eat. Colors are inspirational. But it is like with trans fat. We couldn't make a buttercream with wonderful butter. No, it has to be Crisco. It had to be trans fat, shortening, and powder sugar. That was buttercream. But it's no more. A lot of people, a lot of students. But that's what I understand. But why all these chemicals? Why some of these wedding cakes? I suggested a gentleman came to the school and made demo. But believe me, it was so colorful that it's maybe beautiful for a circus. But to eat all these colors, where in the world? I mean, it is a half a bottle of color to color a roll fondant. I mean, you need to eat this stuff.
Yeah.
So there is one thing, and I think it starts already in the home economic in schools that teachers say, listen.
Do you think that people don't have a basic culture of eating like they do in Europe? That maybe that's why, you know, things are a little bit out of bounds or don't make sense to someone who has a background from Europe?
One way you are right, in the other ways I not disagree. It's all. You see, the time I grew up and the time it's now is so different. It's so different. I think styles and even with behavior, it's the same thing. You learn to be polite, you will be polite. If you learn that you can say anything what you want, and then you do it. It doesn't matter how many cards you hurt people or you don't. You see, and the same is with food. When you be taught that everything goes, so you don't have any more what is the top and the bottom, and then of course it goes. We get fed by Food Network. I believe Food Network is the best thing that could come around to keep people focused on food and make the public interested in food, because food in America was, like in some other countries, is just there to sustain your life. You have to eat it, otherwise you can't survive. But food should be an enjoyment.
Yeah.
Food should be, and I believe Food Network comes there because everybody, oh, he makes this, she makes that here. But it's also in the other hand, a curse, because on the Food Network, we put so many amateurs on that everything goes. And that one here, then young people see, it is like in television. If your parents, your friends, or your television tells you that four-letter words are standard. It's part of your life. Young people believe. When Food Network tells us that all the junk in the world is, it's beautiful. Young people do it. That's what it is.
Sure.
Why not teach culture first? And this reminds me on one of the great French philosophers who said once, it is very difficult to find a genius, but it is more difficult to find people with good taste. Yes.
Makes sense.
Yes. And I believe this one. And my students, they look at me, that old man, is he nuts when he talks about like that? And I tell him, listen, I love color, but saddle, don't put a half a bottle inside. If you have to enlighten, and we have Mother Nature, provides us with so many, to example, you want to make red, you can take pomegranate seeds here and make your sorbet colorful. There are so many things what you can do without going into chemical things. Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of modern living, though, that we're so tied to everything being easy to get, and we've forgotten, you know, what people used to have to do to get a loaf of bread, or who the miller was that made your wheat.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's also the kind of what I'm leading to in my next question is, like, I speak to a lot of bakers and cooks about the apprenticeship system being different in Europe. And, you know, some people say, well, it's too restrictive and, you know, it's a lot better here the way we learn how to cook. And I tend to disagree, because I find that when I go to Europe, I find really the classic desserts in some places now, because a lot of things are becoming sort of
totally changed,
Americanized. So I kind of yearn for that old style. And my sister lives in Basel, and we were just passing through the street one day, and she said, oh, I wanted to bring you to this pastry shop, but it's closed down, and they have this dessert that I loved. And she described this little pastry she used to get, and she said, well, you know, the gentleman who was there was getting old, and none of his children wanted to take over, so he just said, well, I'm going to close. And she said, all the recipes are gone. Nobody can reproduce what he did. And I said, wow, that's really sad in a sense.
Yes, it is. And because your sister lives in Basel, I had my school time in Basel. In Basel was the only chocolate school in the world before, which has taken off by Richmond now. Mm-hmm. They left Basel. Yes, and Basel was the only school where you could learn from scratch to the end chocolate. Mm-hmm. And one of my colleagues who went to the school at that one became one. I learned chocolate and became a pastry chef. He learned pastry first and became a chocolatier. Yeah, Mr. Lynch from Maison du Chocolat in France.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, and it's so strange. Yeah, but I agree with, let's say, 50%. I understand that apprenticeship, where you go through apprenticeship, it's wonderful. But I believe, first of all, it is too young where we go in Europe.
Yeah.
When we finish, we have from 14 years to 17 or 18, we go in apprentice. I believe it is too young.
Yeah,
yeah. That one. Yeah. Then second, I believe half the time would be fine. Because once you are 17 or 18, you learn faster. So I believe the ideal would be that you take an apprenticeship when you're 17 or 18 and make 1 or 2 years apprentice. And then, because the learning is totally different when you're 17 or 18 than when you're 14.
Mm.
And many times in the, now it's, they have all labor laws. When I grew up, there was no labor laws. So people had to let you wash your car as an apprentice if they like to. Yeah, which is totally against the law right now. Yeah.
Sure.
The people before, they had to work until you fall into the bed. Now, 8 hours or you'd be sued. Yeah. So it comes a long way. So I believe in a great education in the beginning. But then we need to let loose. That's why actually in America the schools comes in here. And I have seen that people who have already an education and then come to schools, that there is already a little life experience behind,
mm-hmm.
which makes it, and also it's there much easier to teach. And so a combination between what we do now here and Europe, for me, that would be ideal.
Well, I was going to ask about what are the steps to becoming a pastry chef, and in what you're lining with, you're saying I started cooking in a restaurant with my brother when I was just in high school, and then after mm-hmm. high school I went straight to the army and became a cook for the general. So I
yeah.
had a more difficult route, I think, and then ended up coming back to New York and working in restaurants. And my wife finally said, you know, you should go to school and get a little more education. And that's how I went into school. But I found that, in some sense, having done that experience before going to school, I learned a lot of things about, you know, being an adult and learning a different system by regiment, maybe in the army. And school, you know, provided some of the things that I was missing in a classical, I guess, training system. So what do you think are the steps now that people should take to go into pastry?
Yes, yeah. You had one of, because you went to the army, and there is what it's called discipline. And it's one of the things we're totally missing, and that's why it's over-sweetening. Never taste what we're doing. And even in the recipes, when I open books here, it all looks beautiful. But where is the taste? Where is the taste? You learn this more. To example, when you went to the army, you learned it has to be like that. Now, when you went to school, you learned more or less certain things. What you ever believed it doesn't work, it can work. I believe, to example, that when a young fellow comes out of the school here, 1 year, go to school, and good instructor and teach you what food is all about. Then you should go 1 year to an externship site to learn on the job,
right.
And then you should go back. For me, that would be the ideal thing. Then you go back. 1 more year to a school. 1 year to school to learn the basics. What is, how things are grown, how things are done. Yeah. Then for 1 year to an externship site, then come back to the school. From there, you go out in the industry.
Huh.
That would be for me if, but we always say if life would be perfect, but life is not perfect, so it never will happen in the first place.
Yeah.
In the first place. But this one would be, for me, the ideal learning. And the other thing is that we are always scared to go to a different country. Believe me, in all the countries I have been here, certain things, what one country said, it can never be done. In another country, they showed me exactly the opposite. It can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe we are so open with the market. We are so open with trading. But in our industry, we always want to stay in one place. No, go out and learn from different people, different culture. Because if you learn just by following a food network or a book, you have never, because now what we have the infusion cooking or the infusion baking, I sometimes call it a confusion baking.
Yeah, exactly.
So, because you have nothing, there is nothing behind. There's no knowledge behind how things actually work, how things actually taste, to combine maybe two strange cultures together. And sometimes some people even don't like that one here.
Yeah.
Yeah. To make it to so people like it, you have to have the knowledge that one and one fits together.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I bake bread because I first went to school for cooking and then went back to the French culinary for bread baking.
And I think bread is the is people should start before they do anything else to learn how to make bread.
Uh-huh.
Because bread is the best living things on earth. If this is too cold, if it's too warm, if the lava is too sour, all these things you learned, smell, taste, timing, that's all in the bread.
Yeah, there are variables in every sort of situation that you have to confront and take care of. You know, you're the tending the bread because it's a live thing. You're the one making it do what you want it to do. Or the opposite way, it's telling you what to do.
Yes, complete. And that I said, anybody who should go into a pastry should learn first for at least for half a year, in bread baking. Because bread is, I call it a matter of life. Because it does. I mean, you see, I'm usually grading at the event before the students leave the pastry department. I grade them. They can make a chocolate. They can make a cake. But when it comes to bread, they're always lost.
Yeah.
And it's sad because, like everything else, everything comes from learning how to use. And you use your head, you use your senses, you use your feeling, you use the temperature. All is bread.
Yeah.
Once you know, you can do with bread whatever you want. Bread, that's with you what it wants. Once you have the knowledge that certain things work like that, then it's actually... but bread baking is, or bread baking is too difficult, or bread baking, some people think, is kids play. No, it's the most difficult things is baking a beautiful bread. When they should learn this first. All the other things would then suddenly fall into places.
Yeah, because you're using percentages and you're learning hydration.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to learn how to make German breads, and because, you know, I grew up in Europe and lived there while I was in the army.
Yeah.
I love German bread, but I'm still trying to figure out how to make it, so it's going to take a little while, but I'm trying. Today I'm making even a Vollkornbrot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hopefully it'll work out. It's been said that you were the chef who created crème brûlée.
No. That's totally not true.
Okay.
I was more or less reintroduced crème brûlée into America.
Uh-huh.
More story: crème brûlée was in America before. It died. I know some books from New Orleans. It was down where the French made some crème brûlée here. And at the time when I was pastry chef at Le Cirque, the owner, Mr. Sirio Mazzioni, came one day back and said, listen, I was in Spain and I ate a creme de catalan. And it was a custard, and on top of the custard, there was a sugar crust on top. So I said to him, yes, at the Savoy Hotel, we have made what, you know, on the creme brulee here, we called it creme reverse. What you have, creme caramel, we called We had cream caramel and cream reverse, where the caramel was on the top, not on the bottom. And because in the old-fashioned cream brulee, you put a lot of more egg yolks inside, so I reduced the recipes that I had from the Savoy to make it not taste like an omelette. I did not like that because I tried many times. Creme brulee was always cooked in little cups, like espresso cups, deep cups. And that was the outside. It was tough on the inside, was soupy. So I started, first of all, I looked for malt which is flat. And there I find a malt which everyone uses now, the fluted malt, thin. Yeah. And I ordered some of them. And I ordered the Limoges. But it went 5-6 times to the washing machine of the gyp. So there was a company in Chicago Hall. They make some thin flat molds here. Now everyone uses it. And now, of course, they can go 100 times through a washing machine. They still stay. And so I used this one here. And I tried to make this in a flat shallot dish. When it's baked here, first I started, of course, baking it in a water bath. Later on, I changed the system and I baked it without water bath in a confectionery oven, which bakes actually faster and nicer.
But at a lower temperature?
At a much lower temperature.
Yeah.
And what I did in the deck oven, pizza oven, or under the stove here, I baked it usually between 300 to 325. When I put it without water bath in the confection oven, between 200 to 225. And it bakes wonderful. We have not a mess, things like that. Many things was all trial and error. And of course, when we were successful then here, and it was more or less the owner of this Lucerne. He loved to eat this one. He gave every customer, I made creme brulee more than I can tell you, everyone get a compliment. Everyone, taste this one.
Boy.
And of course, then the rest is history. Later on, I had more or less an outfall with Bocuse. Uh-huh. Not an outfall, it was more or less. Having grown up with French people, yeah, I hated the beginning of Bocuse's arrogant, give me the recipe. I mean, anybody, my students I taught as an adjunct professor at a New England City College, everyone got the creme brulee recipe. But him, I shortened it. And of course, he called the owner and called me certain words. And then, of course, the owner gave him the recipe. And then Bocuse made it where it got really famous. Then it was in France declared as the pastry of the centuries. And it was through Bocuse. And it was called creme brulee à la Siria Mazzoni. And that's the entire story. That's the entire. So I only reinvented and make more or less the certain items more to the 20th century, not too much egg yolks inside here. Now, also in England, we use double cream. That's more richer than our heavy cream.
Yep.
So I took some off, and I put a little bit of milk, 90% heavy cream and 10% milk, so I started. But later on, when we became 40% heavy cream and things like that, but then I only used that one here in the States. Because if you remember, 25 years ago, there was only a 32% and a 36% heavy cream. There was no 40%. Now you can buy the, everyone has the 40%.
Yeah, you can even get butter that's like European butter now.
Yes.
Although I've heard a lot of people say, no, it's just not the same. So.
But that we came a long way in America, a long, long way here. And I look, Fugenrecht don't send his son to Ding, he sent it to an American school.
Mm-hmm.
Bocus sent his son for 1 year to an American school. A lot, we have a lot of European students now here.
Yeah.
It is here, I believe, Europeans, they, like we, they were fall asleep. They were resting on the laurels.
Mm.
While we wanted to be better. And so we start to improve. And you can eat in America now very, very good too. You know, now I have seen breads when I had my business in Washington, D.C. We had breads and the baguettes. I mean, they were great. I get them delivered in the morning and the afternoon.
Yeah.
They were like I would be in Paris.
I'm hoping somebody will start baking German breads in America, like in Germany, you know.
Yes, it is. The lucky things where I'm in the Culinary Institute here, we have very good German bakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always said, if I retire at the CI, the biggest things what I would miss is the bread.
Yeah.
Because I take my loaf of German bread with home. Things I always miss. And I'm living so long. I'm since 17, since I was 17, I don't live in Germany anymore.
Yeah.
That still is in my blood, a beautiful, not mushy, a hearty bread.
Sure. Where do you think pastry is trending towards now? I mean, for a while we had really towering, kind of like sort of harking back to Carême's time, these strange displays on a plate that were really difficult to eat. Do you think people are going back to simple desserts?
We can only hope. Oh, yes, because I mean, look, one day in a food magazine, there was a plate inside, and there, one of these so-called great pastry chefs here, or super pastry chefs here, there was a caramel tart on the bottom, and the caramel tart, there was a cone, glued a cone on, and on top of the cone, there was something else, as you call it, towering here. Now, in the vault, the waiter must take a half a step every time he comes to you, otherwise all things fall all over. Now, that one here was great desserts. I would say chunk desserts, nice for picture making.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with desserts. I had an experience. I went, and I don't want to say the restaurant before they go after me. I sit in one first class, top American restaurant. I sit there. Yeah, and of course, chef, some people in New York still know me, and he brought all the desserts out. And one of the desserts here was a big, funny Venetian glass and a ball with a foot. Now I sit sitting on a bench. I did not know what was in the top of that glass ball. Here, you see, it was like a champagne glass here, but very high. Here, like a cocktail glass, but with a foot, probably as long as my arm. And then a colorful ball on top. Now I'm sitting to the bench. I did not know what is in there. I had to lift myself up from the bench and look into it. Now, how to eat? Taking this glass and putting it on my knee, or just fishing in with a spoon and start to eat?
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes, it was done one of the fine pastry chefs in the thing. And I told him, my dear friend, here, make me tall or make the glass smaller. Otherwise, I can't eat your dessert. Yes, I hope we go to flavor. I mean, I tell my students every day, taste things. The most important thing is when people tell you, wow, that tastes good. People forget sometimes the look, but the taste you will never forget.
Yeah.
So great food that tastes well. If you make, for example, you make a creme brulee, all the recipe, there's never a pinch of salt there. But you're having an egg inside or an egg yolk inside. No flavor comes out if there's not a pinch of salt inside. It is not the vanilla or the ginger or whatever you put in. It is that pinch of salt who makes the things alive. Well, we don't teach this anymore. It is just, we teach, it looks good. And I'm one of the old fashioned ones. No, if taste and looks comes together, you made it. And I hope, but I haven't seen it. Be honest, I haven't seen it because I always get the scary look from my student when I ask them, why don't you taste things like that? Why don't you improve the taste? When it's lemon, it doesn't have to be lemon out of the bottle. Lemon can, you take the lemon zest. Yeah, you take lemon, an acid from the lemon juice. Don't take lemon flavor coming in a bottle. And certain things here, I mean, I get a star on a thing. Why not a bottle? It's the same thing. Why not have a vanilla extract, which is 90% brown water, which take they made a caramel and burned it and then add water inside. That's the flavor of. And then they put a little alcohol inside and some leftover vanilla beans.
Yeah.
And that's vanilla extract. No, get the best. Take less. Yeah. It shouldn't be overpowering. And that's the whole thing. Doesn't matter. I always hit my head against a brick wall because my colleagues, I said, it is good, but I mean, the only things I taste is so much ginger, or they put 20 different flavor in one.
That's confusing.
You don't, so confusing, so much flavor. Oh, it has to taste peanut, passion fruit, raspberry, all these things in one thing here. And then the chef, it's beautiful. Come on, you old-fashioned guy. Here. No, I don't taste anything. It tastes oil, kuddle muddle. Honestly, it does.
Yeah.
Give me two examples. The same one you make, two examples. A beautiful roast chicken. Now you have salt and pepper at the top. And roasted, that is succulent and crispy on the outside. Nothing could be better. You don't know all the chunk in the world to put inside. You taste the chicken meat, that is it. To taste that it's nice and moist, the crunchiness, nothing. No. It's just a chicken.
Yeah, I think people kind of like lose sight of what you're trying to do with the food or what the item can give to you without having to overpower it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's in color and the mishmash of flavors. That's the biggest enemies we have in our profession. And I hope. Now, we all have to go through a time. Maybe we go back, to the olden days, but using all the knowledge we have and applying it to our modern living.
Yeah. Well, I think we go through evolution and everything becomes so modern and so much simpler for us that we forget how we got there. And sometimes we go back, we say, hey, you know, that was good what we used to do. Why don't we go back and try it again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I spent some time this summer at my sister's in Switzerland, and it's such a great area, Basel, because you're next to Germany, you're next to France. So, but that corner there, you know, from Alsace and that region is great because they're really great desserts that meld together with everything that's, you know, organic in the area. That I put some desserts that my sister made and reminded me, you know, a lot of the flavors that are influenced, you know, of course, from Austria. And then the just wonderful fruits that you have available. And the simplest thing, like quiche.
Yes. Oh, just hardly anybody uses that here.
Oh, I love it. I made a quetsch Gremmelkuchen.
Yeah? I still have a whole jar. A neighbor brought it to me and said, I don't know what to do with that one. And I still have a jar. I just cooked a jam with it. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, my sister dries them, and she sends them to us from Switzerland from their orchard. So it's wonderful, and they make great kielsch and everything with all their fruits. Yeah.
If you open a bottle of kirsch over here, over there, and you open one here, kirsch von Fleischmann, one tastes like medicine, the other one tastes like God heaven, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the fruits.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolute.
Well, I learned something about nature from my brother-in-law. He brought me to the orchard, and we were picking the plums and the mirabelle and everything. And he always says, oh, you always have to get the one from the top of the tree that looks a little ugly, but it's the best taste. And I said, ugh, I don't know. It, you know, with our squeamish American kind of everything has to look beautiful like apples, you know. And then you really taste, you go, wow, that's the fruit.
Yes.
It's the sun. It's the earth, the terroir.
Yes, yes, absolute.
Well, my favorite part was my sister making these really simple mama cakes, you know, and she made Quarkkuchen.
Yeah.
Schokoladenstriezel, and I was in heaven. It's just, you know, those really simple things. And when I first met you, and I don't know if you remember, you were in my bread class one day, and I think you were making Stollen, and then I met a student who was in your class, in the pastry class at FCI, and he was German. We were speaking, you know, about things in Germany, and I told him I was born there, and my father lived there, so I said, oh, you know, I'd really love to take Chef Dieter's class, but, you know, I'm working all the time. So he goes, oh, don't worry, I'll give you all the recipes. And he gave me all your recipes. So I said, wow, it's really wonderful because it's really a great base, knowledge base there. And so I'm wondering, are you going to write a book and leave us all your great ideas?
First, when I was a French culinary, I wanted to write a book. Then I left French culinary, and when I had my own business, I had no time for writing a book.
Yeah.
Now I started to already put a book together, and then one of the publishers said, listen, you're out of the loop, more or less. You're not more in circulation. Like when you were a pastry chef, people were writing. Now you're an instructor. Nobody buys a book from an instructor or a professor of a culinary thing. Yeah. So maybe later.
Well, I haven't tasted your delicious.
No. It is. You have one segment or one show on television. Doesn't matter. You know the top or the bottom or know nothing. You have one day on a food channel. You can sell your book. I assure you that.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna do it the difficult way through my website. I'm gonna try to write a book with all my notes from when I've been cooking all these.
Wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful. That's great. That's great. And I'm still in my golden age. Maybe I still can make it.
Well, I hope you do. It'd be very important to keep all that knowledge for a lot of young people to really learn what good pastry is.
I hope so.
Yeah. I have one last question for you.
Yes.
What is your favorite dessert?
My favorite dessert. All right. You know Elsass? You know. Basel, Elsass, they're all together. Black Forest, Elsass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have a tart, they call it a galette, a very flat puff paste rolled up. very thin slices of apple on the top, brushed with butter, sprinkled on cinnamon sugar, and bake them. And then a little bit of ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
Very thin and flat, that you can take this piece, and the apples are caramelized here, not too sweet. You have sour, sweet. The puff paste is thin, that is just covered, holds the apple together, and then a beautiful vanilla ice cream on top. And I'm in heaven.
That sounds very good.
Simple and easy, right?
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you very much, Chef, and I'd really like to meet you and personally again, and thank you.
I would be very delighted if you come up and I show you around.
Exactly.
You let me know whenever you come.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much, Chef.
You're welcome.
Okay, take care.
You too.
Cheers.
Cheers.